Evening, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for standing by. Welcome to today's Cairn Homes half-year results analyst and investor conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. I must advise you that this conference is being recorded today, Tuesday, 5th of September, 2017. I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Mr. Michael Stanley, CEO. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the call. I'm joined today by our CFO, Tim Kenny, and Declan Murray from our investor relations team. Before I move to the presentation, I thought I'd spend a minute just reflecting on what we set out to do when we floated Cairn Homes in mid-2015. Our ambition was to establish a well-capitalised Irish home builder, constructing quality homes with an emphasis on design, innovation and customer service, and to take advantage of a unique opportunity to acquire development land from our natural owners. Since the IPO, we have deployed capital in a considered manner, securing a very well-located land bank with a potential to build 12,700 homes. We have driven value enhancement from land bank acquisition through planning and now active construction across many sites. Well over 90% of our land bank is located in the Greater Dublin area. Broadly speaking, we have two complementary business areas: starter, affordable and competitively priced homes in well-located sites with excellent public transport and infrastructure links, and prime apartment sites in or near Dublin City Centre. We cater for a range of customers, from first-time buyers, those trading up and downsizing. We've assembled sites for developments of significant scale, which is a key differentiator, and we've a very strong and talented team in place to deliver results. We've enjoyed strong investor support based on our specific profile and characteristics and on the recovery characteristics of the Irish economy. And I'll bring you to the highlights for the period on our slide presentation, which, as you, I'm sure, are aware, is available online this morning. On the financial side, our revenues have increased by 25.2 million to 41 million, including 94 completions, up from 39 in H1 16, and our gross profit is up 5.1 million to 7.7 million for the period. We have continued in progression in our gross profit margin, which is now up to 18.7 for the period, comparing to 16.5 in H1 16. To date, the company has invested almost 900 million in development land on our 32 core sites and some non-core sites, which we will continue to dispose of. A recent equity placing and fundraising supported our acquisition of the Montrose site to the tune of 100 million. What for us is very encouraging is our forward sales pipeline. Today, the company has 474 forward sales units. That is ahead of our autumn launches, including first show units, which we will be doing in Shackleton and Glenheron, two of our new schemes. And this gives us confidence on our current year numbers, but more importantly also underpins our 2018 numbers, as a number of these units will not close until next year. On the operational side, we're active on 9 sites. These sites will deliver 3,250 homes, and today we are selling across 7 of those homes. And improving affordability, liquidity in the mortgage market improving, and government initiatives including Help to Buy are supporting our progress and our scaling. We do enhance value through planning permissions and planning consents and gains. To date, the company, and I don't want to tempt fate, has achieved over 30 successful planning consents. To date, we haven't had a single refusal on any of our new planning consents that our planning team have put through the local authorities. And I think that's a reflection of our approach to design and how we embrace local authorities and planners to come up with schemes that work. We started our first joint venture with NAMA this year, earlier in the year, and we will complete most of the construction of those 70 units this year. And we do look forward to further opportunities and would welcome further opportunities of that nature. The Montrose site is a very special acquisition for us. We believe it will appeal to a broad spectrum of buyers, people living in the city, professionals and young people looking for apartments in this location, as well as people trading down and potentially also investors. and we're at the design stage at the moment in the, on the Montrose site. We are delighted to have joined the Dublin Stock Exchange as an Irish home builder and believe that this will increase our retail and institutional reach, and we were recently added to the FTSE Global Small Cap Index. We generate a lot of employment, both directly and through our subcontractors. And today we are delighted that over 1,200 people are working on our developments, and we expect that to grow to over 2,000 people in the coming 12 months. One of those new people is our new CFO, Tim Kenny, who joined us a couple of weeks ago, and I'm delighted for the first time to introduce Tim as he brings you through our financials. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Michael. Good morning. Michael's brought you through the financial highlights. Now let me bring you through more detail behind the half-year numbers. I think the key takeaway in the numbers is the considerable progress we're making to achieve our strategic objectives, and the numbers for the half-year certainly support this. So on page 6 on the income statement, I'm looking at the coloured lines in particular, if it helps to just guide you in looking at the numbers. Revenue of 41 million. Up from 16 million, growth of 157%. Importantly, 94 house sales in the first half compared to 39 in the same period in 2016. Site sales of 14 million in the first half as we disposed of some of our non-core sites. Importantly, the gross profit margin is up at 18.7% compared to 16.5% in the first half of 2016 and 17% for the full year 16. Gross profit of 7.7 million earned in the half year, significantly ahead of the 2.6 million earned in the same period in 16, and is ahead of the total gross profit earned in the entire of 2016. The administrative expenses have increased to 5.2 million in the half year as we continue to invest in people, systems and agile but disciplined processes, adding to our operational strength and supporting the scaling of the business. At this early stage, it's not surprising that our admin expenses are growing as we ensure we have the right support office structures to ensure we can deliver our planned revenue target in 2018 and beyond. The operating profit after exceptional items was 2.5 million compared to 1.6 million in the same period in 16. The exceptional item of 500,000 euros related to the Irish Stock Exchange listing, which completed in July. And finally on this page, the loss after tax for the half year was €272,000 compared to a loss of just shy of €600,000 in the same 6 months in 2016. Turning to the balance sheet, and again using the colours just to help guide us on the page, I just want to point out a few numbers. Starting with our inventories, our core land bank of €766 million, which includes all of the core 33 sites that make up our well-located land bank and include the development spend to the end of June on our 9 active developments. It also includes the remaining development land collateral of just shy of 80 million, down from 130 million at the year end. And we expect to convert the bulk of this into full land ownership in the second half of the year. Later in the presentation, Michael will go into some detail on a number of our developments. Following the successful share placing in May, we had net debt of 69 million at the end of June, with cash on hand of 102 million, including restricted cash of 27 million. We have competitive terms on our medium-term bank loan of 171 million, and we've undrawn revolving credit facilities of 30 million euros. So we have a strong cash and debt position to support the scaling of the business. And we've also identified non-core sites with an estimated value of in excess of 40 million, which will be sold and generate cash over the next 12 to 18 months. It's worth noting that our loan-to-value ratio at the end of June was a conservative 22%. Two other points on the balance sheet. Firstly, you will see at 30 June we paid a 10.7 million deposit in relation to the Montrose site. This purchase completed in early July and was partly funded by a new debt facility of 50 million euros. Finally, we had total equity at the end of June of 716 million. Overall, a strong balance sheet. Turning briefly to the cash flow on page 8, two points of note. Firstly, to highlight the 39 million cash spend in the 6 months, primarily on the 9 active development sites. And secondly, the net cash proceeds of 51 million from the successful May share placing. Turning to page 9, that sets out our sales performance, and it shows the continuing strong sales trajectory. We're significantly ahead of the same period last year. Average weekly sales are running at 13 units per week, and the dotted line shows the strong cumulative sales trajectory with clear evidence of a positive and growing sales pipeline, which supports our growth aspirations. As of today, we have 474 homes, forward sales on 474 homes, which support our revenue goals for the balance of 17 and into the first half of 18. We expect more than 200 of these forward sales to complete in 2018, and that's prior to further forward sales that will be generated when we launch our autumn sales programme. Now, in relation to slide, our page 10, this was updated just recently on the system, so you may already have it. We just added two small boxes into the section on the right-hand side, which identifies the revenue range in 2018 and 2019, so that people are clear on that point. And what this shows is our plan to scale our revenue, with on the right-hand side of the page, our revenue outlook indicating a target revenue of between 450 and 500 million by 2019, with our average sales price increasing over the next 2.5 years as the mix of sales moves more to apartments. Michael will be going through more detail the mix of our developments between houses and apartments later in the presentations. And as you can see from the left-hand side of the page, setting out sales in units and values, we've made considerable progress with 94 home sales in the first half, and we expect at least 281 home sales in H2, a total of at least 375 sales in 2017, which is very much supported by the strong pipeline of forward sales of 474 units that I mentioned earlier, which have an estimated sales value of 188 million, including VAT. Overall, this gives us great sales momentum for the rest of 17 and into 18. Thanks for listening, and now let me hand back to Michael.
Thank you, Tim. Bringing you to slide 12, we show some of our existing brands that we are building under today, and those 8 brands on our live sites, and 7 of those, as I said earlier, are selling sites. We thought it would be helpful to give a sense of our investment in land and how we think about it and how we've performed over the last number of years now that we have a large, mature land bank and we can look forward with confidence. So on slide 13, we plot our investment of 816 million since IPO. I suppose importantly, 79% of our core land bank was bought within 1 year of IPO and acquired at that early stage of our growth. When we IPO'd, we talked about a lot of land that was in the hands of unnatural owners. Over the last 2.5 to 3 years, nearly 3 billion of residential land has traded in Ireland. And many of the sites that were available did not suit our criteria in terms of size or location or indeed price. We think we took advantage of an opportunity that may not exist again to acquire a very, very strong land bank with 49% of our total land within the M50 in the Dublin area. On slide 14, we give some sense of our composition and how we think about our land across unit type, buyer profile and planning status. We now think about our business as having two pretty distinct divisions. 69% of our investment is in housing sites, predominantly housing sites and other unit types, but particularly focused towards first-time house buyers. And then apartment sites in great locations, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in the coming slides. On the planning status side, to date we have not purchased unzoned or strategic land. We are targeting and have targeted land with little or no planning risk, and that's reflected in the slide. Demand does exist in Ireland across various sectors of the market, and we now have a strong and versatile land bank, improving our options as we plan our business and our future. 54%, for me critically, of our land bank is targeted at first-time buyers at a price point from €250,000. We'll talk a little bit about that as well. So what does our land bank look like when we divide and split the land between our housing sites and apartments, and what's the different approach? Our housing sites on average have 484 units as an average size across the 22 schemes, predominantly in the greater Dublin area. These sites give us economies of scale, and allow us to amortize prelims and site setup costs over large schemes. We can increase supply to match demand. Our subcontractors get larger contracts and longer duration contracts to help them scale. We use uniform design and specification across many of our sites. Today, across Parkside, Shackleton, Churchfields and Ellesmore, four of our schemes, we are building almost the identical home, and that gives us procurement advantages as well. We are strongly biased towards first-time buyers and competitively priced homes, and these schemes are large enough for us to create communities and provide the ancillary services that our customers demand and indeed should get when they are buying new homes. I think Parkside is an example of our approach. In 2016, the same management team delivered just over 100 homes, and today, in this current year, we'll deliver and close 180 homes on that scheme. If you look at the bottom right-hand side, we give some KPIs on the housing side. It represents about 60% of our capital allocation, 10,600 of our units. Our average selling price across these 22 schemes is 327,000. And our current starting price this autumn on a number of our schemes is actually €280,000. The average plot cost is 42K. And the land cost as a percentage of NDV is 16.3K. We did talk about our at IPO achieving a target for the business of just under 20% of land cost as a percentage of NDV. That's without without factoring in VAT. And today our total land bank has an embedded NDV of 4.25 billion. As we move to apartments, as you can see, the map looks very different. It's more about the city centre. It's not the greater Dublin area. And in fact, 10 of our 11 sites are inside the M50 and many of them very close to the city centre. So we look for location. We have a different approach. It's near employment. It's in established areas. We have historically made poor use of land in Dublin, and that's why land in these locations is rare. And I believe we're very fortunate to have such prime sites to build apartments and also meet changing living patterns, which are certainly happening in Dublin and Ireland more generally, and more people are embracing apartment living. We also expect to see limited competition in these locations because simply many house builders will find it difficult to get the capital to build apartments, and indeed the land is not available in these areas because, as I said, it's quite rare. So as we look at our allocation, about 40% of our investment has been spent on these sites and they will deliver about 2,300 units. Importantly, our ASP on our current land bank is 563 versus the 327 on our housing scheme. So a very different average selling price. I'll move on now to slide 18, which talks a little bit about our model and the characteristics that we believe underpin our business model and our go-forward strategy. We've talked a little bit about land. One of the important things I'd point out on this slide is our ability to amortize fixed preliminary costs over longer-term construction programs. They include site setup, marketing, branding, professional fees, utilities, roads. It's important that on housing schemes we can respond to demand, but also that these larger schemes can afford to pay for those other utilities and services. People, we focus on delivering talent and building careers. And today I believe we have a very strong and talented team in place to deliver on our plan. Planning and design, I referenced this earlier. What's important, I think, for a house builder is understand their market. And understanding the market means that we build and design homes accordingly to meet our customers' needs. And that the range and type of products we design and build appeal to various categories and various customers. The houses we build. A couple of things I'd like to pick out here is, as I said earlier, the uniformity of our starter homes and the advantages that gives us. And also the cost efficiencies we achieve on those larger sites. And finally, the customer service experience. We are ambitious to provide information and advice and support during every step of the home buying journey. I'll bring you through briefly our various sites that are active today. Firstly, Parkside, which I referred to earlier, and also Parkside Now at JV. And we would welcome further opportunities with NAMA and others on adjoining land JVs. Churchfields and Ashburn, which has been a star performer for us, and it's only in its second year that scheme will deliver over 120 units. We will close and move in 120 families into Churchfields this year. Marianella, similarly, has been very strong. Despite no advertisement and no marketing spend, we have sold in excess of 110 units in Marianella, and our first customers will move in quarter four of this year. Shackleton Park is an 1,100-unit scheme at very competitive price points, and the customer response has been very strong, and again, an off-plan sales launch in May achieved over 70 units, and we will be opening up our first show homes on that scheme in autumn of this year. Glenheron and Greystone is a great location with slightly higher ASPs, and again has been very well received by customers in that location. Ellesmore, new start, where we're bringing in roads and infrastructure, and eventually Ellesmore again will deliver over 500 units, and we are just about to launch in September of this year with a starting price of 275,000. Hanover Quay is progressing very well, located where we like to refer to as the Canary Dwarf of Dublin, close to continued and growing FDI and growing employment. And we expect very strong demand for those apartments when we launch them next year. Montrose is a very special site, which we believe will appeal to professionals working in the city, investors, people trading down. And we are currently working with a very experienced Irish and international design team to deliver on our vision and our planning vision for that very special site. Cherrywood, as you can see from the photograph, currently roads, parks and utilities are being brought into that site, and we look forward to putting a new planning application in next year and maybe commence construction in 2018 on that site. Donnybrook in Dublin 4, recently acquired, and our next commencement. It is a ready-to-go site in a great location, and we are due to go on-site on that Donnybrook site towards the year end. Clonburris, as our biggest site, very important that it gets a mention. The local authority are currently working on a revision to the existing strategic development plan for that site. And Cairn looks forward and have engaged with the local authority on that plan, and we look forward to being in a position to lodge our first planning application for residential housing early to mid next year for Clonburris. Griffith Avenue is another apartment site that we will consider starting in the coming year, and a very strong location, again close to the city centre. So our outlook and driving shareholder value. We believe that the economy is strengthening and the fundamentals are strengthening. We also believe that the supply-demand imbalance is growing, and it is more favourable than possibly even when we IPO'd 2 years ago, mainly down to the poor supply response over the last 2 years from our industry, for obvious reasons. We have a clearly defined strategy. We have an exceptional land bank. We have a talented team in place, and our business scaling is on track. We have a strong and growing forward sales pipeline, and overall, the company looks forward to further progress throughout the remainder of 17 and beyond. We have included in the appendix a number of slides dealing with affordability, price recovery, the cost of renting a home versus owning, and there's some very interesting statistics there. The mortgage market, which is certainly improving, and liquidity, which is improving, and then the supply-demand imbalance, and also government responses, recent responses to the supply challenges. Thank you very much, and we will open up to questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll now begin the question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, please press star and 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the hash key. Once again, star 1 if you wish to ask a question. Our first question comes from the line of Ronan Dunphy. Please ask your question.
Hi, folks. Thanks
Hi, guys.
For the opportunity for the call this morning. I'm just wondering, the level of forward sales is obviously very strong and very encouraging looking out towards 2018. You previously said that about 850 or upwards of 850 was the target for completions for next year. Is this still the plan? And then I suppose looking forward a little bit further out when you're in the sort of medium-term steady-state output, is 1,200 units per year still, I suppose, your thoughts on this, or is there the potential opportunity if demand stays strong for this to be higher? Any thoughts on those would be great. Thanks.
Okay. Well, yes and yes in terms of the unit numbers. At this point, 850 is our target for next year. And, you know, we're looking at a business that, as it gets to maturity, we always talked about a business building 1,000 to 1,200 homes, or indeed 1,200, in excess of 1,200 homes, and turning over in the region of 500 million with an EBIT target of circa 20%. And we remain very confident about those numbers. I think the slight difference and maybe additional information we're now providing our investors and shareholders is really around the flexibility of our land bank and how we might achieve that 500 million target. We may, depending on market conditions, decide to bias our activity more towards apartments than housing. But at the moment, our focus is very, very much biased on the housing, where there is very strong demand. So ASPs are obviously higher in apartments. So, for example, if we decided in mid or late 18 to start one or two apartment sites, we will probably achieve or maybe exceed our turnover number, but not necessarily be increasing the number of units because the ASPs are higher. So I hope that gives you some color around that question. But today, as we look forward, 850 and 1,200 remain our targets for the coming years.
Great. Thanks.
Our next question comes from the line of Sam Thomas. Please ask your question.
Hi there. Morning, guys. Could you just please provide an update in terms of what you're seeing in terms of net inflation trends on your sites, i.e. just the underlying HPI versus what you're seeing in terms of material and labour inflation? That's the first one. And then the second one, could you just again provide an update in terms of the land market and how it's looking? I mean, clearly you're continuing to see a good opportunity for land investment, but you know, have you seen any signs of increasing competition, particularly on the larger sites, that's making land deals perhaps not look quite as attractive as they were, say, 12 to 18 months ago? Thank you.
Hi, Sam. HPI, I suppose to start with on house price inflation, in any city, you know, house price inflation is a blend of you know, how house prices are changing in various locations. And I think the disappointing number of new homes completions is certainly having an impact. And most of the house price inflation that we're seeing is being driven by a real shortage, and particularly in the second-hand homes market. We're probably seeing higher house price inflation in second-hand homes than we are in new homes, particularly housing. And again, back to that critical point, you know, a combined salary of, you know, I believe the average in Ireland is around 85 to 90,000 for a couple, and at 3.5 times income, that brings you to very low 300s or low to mid 300s in terms of affordability. And that's why so much of our product is priced in that bracket. So we are seeing some house price inflation, but it is a mixture of very low house price inflation for us in certain locations, and indeed higher house price inflation maybe in areas like Marianella, Hanover Quay, and those other prime locations where there's a real shortage. So I hope that deals with house price inflation. But to be clear, when we talk about on our embedded value and our model looking forward, and in the presentation we talk about 4.25 billion, we do not factor house price inflation into that number. So that is basically at what we see today's, where we see today's current sales prices. On the land buying market, well, look, certainly, you know, 79% of our land was bought when we weren't competing with other capitalized house builders. And of course, as the market recovers, we are seeing more competition, and we are seeing more house builders with capital, maybe backed by private equity or other funders. A site sold last week in Dublin for in excess of 30 million that we didn't bid on. You know, there's a lot of sites that we wouldn't necessarily buy. And I think, yes, land prices have moved quite substantially in the last 2 years. And that's why we feel we took advantage of, honestly, for me, that once in a career opportunity to buy quality land at this sort of price level. On the inflation side, what we're seeing, and we deal with a little bit on the affordability slides that we've included in the presentation, and much of these are sourced from externally, but also some of our own research. And we're seeing wage inflation in the Irish economy, which I think is really important. It helps affordability and will be part of our own labour cost inflation within our building cost model. Labour represents about 50-odd, nearly 55% of our total build cost. Our year-on-year build cost inflation is less than 2% as we look at contracts we're awarding today versus 12 months ago, and that's mainly to do with increased labour. We're not seeing increases on materials, and again, I think that's back to the scale, the uniformity of our design, and that's allowing and giving us a partial hedge against some of those labour increases. So to date, pretty low build cost inflation, and obviously on the flip side, or you know, house price inflation across some of our schemes, that's more than compensating for that cost increase.
Great, very clear. Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Colin Sheridan. Please ask your question.
Yeah, good morning, guys, and welcome, Tim.
Thank you.
Just a couple left for me, looking at the Help to Buy scheme, it's obviously been a good incentive over the last year, but certainly a lot of mixed messages coming from the government as to whether or not it would continue. I mean, would that lead to any change in your strategy if that scheme was to be amended or potentially scrapped? And then just a point of clarity, the 816 million that you have cited as the investment, I'm assuming that includes your non-core land bank, but doesn't include sites that you've already sold off. And if you could just give me some more color on that.
Colin, just to be clear, and Tim, feel free just to correct me here on the finances if I'm wrong, but on the first page, Colin, we talk about an 881 million investment. And the detail below that, just this is on our key highlights, Colin, it kind of gives you a sense of what that includes. So it includes land of approximately remaining, as far as I know, about 40 million that we will continue to trade out.
That's right, and that's what I said earlier, that we have non-core sales of around 40 million.
Yeah, and the 816 really represents our investment on our core land bank.
Colin, the IPO.
Yep.
If that clarifies that.
Yep.
I mean, Help to Buy is obviously topical. I think it is worth mentioning that at the same time as Help to Buy was introduced, Colin, they also changed the central bank did tweak the macroprudential rules. Sensibly, I think keeping that 3.5 times cap, but recognizing that the deposit was a serious challenge for people. Asking young people post-tax to save 40,000-50,000 euros is a big, big ask. And to be very clear, we saw very significant demand and indeed had very strong sales pre-Help to Buy. What Help to Buy has done and the macroprudential rules has done, I suppose, is made more of that demand realizable and is supportive. I think it's too early to say definitively what its impact has been in our industry, but I think it seems to be very positive and certainly is allowing more young people to get on the property ladder and bluntly escape the challenge of trying to rent a home in Dublin today. And we're all aware of the type of rental inflation we're seeing over the last 12 months, which is a serious challenge for people who are trying to save to purchase a new home.
So you wouldn't be talking at this point about potentially changing, velocity of sales anywhere, or moving more to a different part of your land bank if the scheme was to change substantially?
No, I don't think so, Colin. I think we're very happy with our approach at the moment. We are building housing and competitively priced housing across 4 to 5 schemes, and we'll add others, and we're building apartments in Hanover and Marianella, appealing to different price points. I think what we tried to get across today, and we're really thinking more in the medium term, you know, as the country and the economy continues to evolve, we have great flexibility within our land bank. And I think we tried to get that message across this morning that we have options, and as the economy and different sectors our buyer groups as demand changes, we can respond. And as I used the example in Parkside, we were able to almost double our output with the same management team year on year to meet realisable demand. And we'll be able to do the same in Shackleton and Ellesmore and Churchfields and indeed Clonburris when we get active on Clonburris, we hope, next year.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Our next question comes from the line of Andy Murphy. Please ask your question.
Morning, gentlemen. I've got two. Just on the Help to Buy again, just following up there, could you give us a flavour or the absolute figures of the proportion of sales that are sold under Help to Buy, to give us a sense of how much that's been used on your sales? Perhaps you can do it by the first half and on the forward order book if you can. And secondly, I was wondering on the breakdown of the revenue, whether you could give us either the gross profit margin or the gross profit figures against the three lines of revenue.
I think we'll be taking
on
them
both
offline.
Yeah, that's the sort of information we just not comfortable to give at this stage, and we can take it offline with you.
Yeah, I think to give you a sense on the proportion, Andy, and one of the reasons we're a little bit hesitant there is that, you know, there's a number of people that have bought homes that you know, may have applied or in application for Help to Buy. So it's difficult for us to be absolutely precise, but much higher proportion, and indeed north of 50% on our housing schemes. No surprise, you know, if the government are offering that level of support, you know, people will apply. But there's various rules that have nothing to do with us in terms of whether that application is successful. It has, for example, to do with the amount of tax that buyers have paid in the previous fiscal year, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, low or non-existent, in fact, in places like Marianella, Andy, and very much more supportive on schemes like Parkside and Ashburn would be the sense of it.
Right. Okay. And then just one other quick follow-up one on the admin cost line. I think it came in at just over $5 million for the first half. Is that kind of reflective of a full year run rate? In other words, you're looking at sort of 10 for the full year. So I think that's probably a bit higher than we were practicing.
I think we feel you know, we will add and continue to add to our talented team. We've had some, you know, big new recruits, including my colleague next to me, our head of sales and marketing, Rashika Hassan, who joined us recently from Groupon. Key hires across our customer service area, planning, site management. You know, we have a very talented team, Andy, and that number probably represents a reasonably mature number. And we've always said one of our biggest differentiators from, let's say, our UK peer group, who have a lot of regional offices, they tend to run pretty high central overhead that might run at 4 or 5%. We expect to be certainly less than 3% and maybe closer to 2 or 2.5% as a mature business. So, you know, let's say if we were, you know, at that sort of 500 million target, Andy, the central overhead might get up to 12%.
Right.
It'll grow a little bit more.
It will grow more.
Yeah. It'll grow
a little bit more. But not hugely significant.
And it's certainly out of, you know, a little bit out of sync with our turnover is in H1. So, you know, we've built the business to scale, Andy, is the answer to that.
All right, great. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from the line of Eamon Hughes. Please ask your question.
Hi, guys. Just two of three, if you don't mind. Just can I retrace back to maybe the comments, Michael, you made in relation to cost inflation? I suppose maybe summarising or paraphrasing, kind of ballpark 2% in labour, which is just over half of the build costs and flat in terms of materials. Could we take it that in terms of delivery for 2018, maybe looking forward, that given that you're kind of a lot of contracts will already be in place, that we could work with sort of similar average cost inflation, kind of running at similar levels in 2018 as it is at the moment? Maybe that's just first question. Secondly, just there's a lot of media commentary around just kind of maybe stepping away from Help to Buy, but just in relation to possible changes in VAT in the budget in October. Any thoughts on that? And then finally, maybe just in terms of Donnybrook, you talked about being on site there possibly by year end. So a precursor maybe in relation to Montrose. Is there any colour you can give us in terms of site cost there versus Montrose, higher or lower, possible ASP, higher or lower? How are you kind of thinking about that?
Okay. To take it in reverse, on Donnybrook, that is a ready-to-go consent, but it's currently with on board Planola on a revision of the original consent aim and to potentially increase the unit numbers from the mid-70s to the high-80s. So it isn't a large development. They are, however, very large apartments. It's a site that we were in negotiations on for many, many months, and recently concluded that transaction. And I think it does give us a presence and a fresh start and a new start in that location in Dublin 4, and maybe could be viewed as a precursor to RTE. So from that sense, we believe it's a very good acquisition. And ASPs will certainly be above that average apartment price that we talked about on today's presentation, or indeed slightly above that. In relation to build cost, Eamon, I suppose we've always tried to be kind of cautious as we think ahead on our business, and you know, the fact that you know we don't factor in house price inflation and the type of scale of operation we are, and that kind of hedge that gives us when we go to negotiate with our subcontractors. And I suppose bluntly, our subcontractors look at our model. It gives them confidence. They can recruit more people. Crucially for many of them, and we support this, they can take on apprentices, and that hasn't happened in our industry for 10 years. And really important to start to control labour costs, and that needs to continue to be successful. And on the procurement side, it's around the uniformity of design. Same roof trusses, door sets, bricks, blocks, windows go into houses across four of our schemes. And as we grow and scale, we expect to continue to try and get the benefits from those economies. So as we look into next year, we'd honestly welcome wage inflation. I think, you know, it's important. I know we have to stay competitive as an economy, but we had 7, 8, 9 years of wage deflation, increasing taxation. That switched. We're seeing, albeit modest, wage increases, and we're seeing flat or reduced taxation for our home buyers. If that filters into some of our labour cost, Eamon, I think we'd welcome it, because broadly it just helps our customers' affordability. So thinking ahead, it's very hard to put a number on it, but as we've said, because labour is about 55% of our build cost, and that's our hard build cost, because as you know, some of our build costs are soft costs, including development levies, etc., professional costs, utilities, connections. So it's about 50-odd% of what we term as our hard cost. So, you know, I think 2% is probably a reasonable number for next year. But it's something that we have to keep an eye on and watch closely.
Maybe
and VAT,
okay.
And VAT, yeah. I suppose I just don't think it's for us. It's our place to comment on government policy. There is no doubt that the government today, you know, have the challenge of what has been a very poor supply response in the last 2 years to this housing crisis. And they have to look at various measures that will work. But it's complex, obviously. As we look forward, and I don't want to be misquoted in this, but, you know, we don't factor in taxation changes into our expected returns. And it doesn't mean that other house builders, and particularly small and private house builders that are trying to grow their balance sheets and grow their equity so they can acquire sites in the absence of bank funding, don't need more support. And it's certainly the supply response over the last 2 to 3 years from our sector would suggest that more needs to be done.
Okay.
But that's not to say that we're not pretty happy with the position we have today in terms of our land bank, our scaling, and our competitiveness.
Okay, Michael, thanks.
Our last question comes from the line of Darren McKinley. Please ask your question.
Morning, Michael, Derek and Tim. How are you? Just two questions. One is on with regard to financial capacity and what you're seeing with regard to the opportunities pipeline. Would you say it's as strong now as it has been or significantly less so given the wind down of NAMA? With regard to your longer term expectations around operating profit margin, could you give us some guidance there again, please?
Okay. I'll pass over to Tim on the long-term guidance. Just to cover, I think you're specifically asking about the land market and where it is today versus historically. Is that right on the first question?
Yeah, I mean, with regards to the opportunities that are out there and what sort of financial capacity you think you have currently without additional capital raisings, yeah?
Well, to be very clear, we're very happy with our land bank today. And I think if we're looking at future opportunities, we're probably thinking a little bit differently. We certainly always look at adjoining land opportunities. Where we already have an active site, and I think the NAMA JV points to that, where we have an existing brand in place, an existing team building great homes with strong customer demand, if we can acquire adjoining land to increase our returns from those schemes, that's a sensible approach. And it's something that we would look at. And indeed, you know, NAMA land probably does adjoin quite a substantial portion of, or at least a reasonable portion of our current land bank. So we might look to those opportunities. I think on the capital side, and I think we will certainly give a little bit more guidance on this, and something that Tim is certainly, you know, at the moment looking at very closely is our cash generation as a business next year. As we start producing these sorts of numbers and volumes, we become very cash generative. And probably as early as early mid next year, we start kicking off quite a bit of cash and we kind of turn that tipping point. So we don't see any need for additional capital because bluntly throughout 2018, 19, 20 and 21, where we're unlikely to replace a substantial portion of our land bank, we are going to be very cash generative.
Okay. And just on the operating margin?
We're running at a margin this year around 18.7%. It's up a lot on last year. We're confident that we have a margin that's growing slightly above that level. It really depends on the mix between houses and apartments that Michael has spoken about that flows into 18 and 19. So my guidance is 18.7 and drifting upwards from that. I think Michael would have talked about a target of looking to hit 20 over time.
20 in terms of EBIT, but if we're heading for 20 gross, you know, which we'd like to think about, you know, that's where that journey is in the very near term. You know, we're already very close to that kind of EBIT target, which at this point in our journey as a business gives us a lot of confidence, Darren, as we think about our future guidance, particularly, as I said, as we're not factoring in house price inflation.
Yeah, so but currently you're running close to 20% gross margin.
We're 18.7, as Tim said. We'd expect that to maybe drift up a little bit in the second half and H1 of next year. As we look at today's forward sales book, the trend is upwards, yes.
And if we look at operating profit, it's sort of 3 million over 41 for the first half. But, I mean, if we look at, say, 2 years, would you expect that operating profit margin to be sort of mid-double digits, sort of 15% toward our...
Well, what we really said, I suppose, is that you know, our central overhead is close to maturity. You know, if our central overhead is an annual run rate now of 10 million and even as, you know, as we quadruple our turnover as a business, we are only going to be adding a couple of million to our central overhead. So, you know...
It's about how we scale.
It's about how we scale, yeah.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, sir.
There are no further questions at this time. Please continue.
Okay, So I'll pass you back to Tim to do a wrap-up, and thank you very much.
That's great. Very nice to meet you all for the first time, and I'm sure over the next days and weeks I'll be catching up with a number of you face-to-face. And in the meantime, if you have any follow-up queries, please don't hesitate to contact me or Declan Murray, and we'll deal with your query as the very best we can. So thank you very much and look forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect.